For some of you, it's your first time. For others, it is not. But for today, I would like to welcome you all to Epic Realms.
And enemies, heroes and villains, welcome to Epic Realms. Today's guest is a professional wrestler working for many companies throughout his career. From NFW to Ring of Honor, he is loved by fans all around. He's also the co-host of Darkness Radio, one of the most legendary paranormal TV shows or radio shows ever. Please welcome the one and only Beer City Bruiser to Epic Realms. Welcome on in.
Thanks for having me.
I'm like, TV shows, what the heck? See, we were just talking about radio and being live and pre-recorded and having to, you know, go over screw-ups. Like, there's no editing there. That's there forever. I mean, I could, but we're not going to leave it in there.
Sounds good to me. It's a radio show. It's a podcast.
It's just a podcast. So, to me, when I was looking this morning and kind of going through all my notes and everything, there was a small elephant in the room, and the small elephant in the room is that you may not know this, and you may not recognize me, but you and I, we worked together. I mentioned NFW for a reason. You and I worked there probably for the course of like 4 or 5 years at around the same time. And so There have been times that I vaguely remember you giving me a chop in a battle royal and throwing me over. And it was always battle royals. Like, you always worked other matches than me because I was pretty new. But I do remember a handful of battle royals, and I know for a fact that you you and I traded chops earlier on in your also earlier career. So it's kind of a fun little small world after all sort of moment to
go. I always tell everybody pro wrestling is the largest, smallest world you're ever going to get into.
Yeah.
Because you meet everybody. And I remember some early advice I got. It was actually from Honky Tonk Man. He said, you know, careful on the people that you shit on growing up, because when you're coming back down, those are the same people.
Yeah.
And it's funny because after Ring of Honor got bought and stuff and shut down, and I started doing indies again, I started bumping into guys like you, like, oh, hey, yeah, we met, you know, and it's like, okay, yeah, I get it. It was like, cool. Yeah, you're cool. Like, awesome.
Yeah, you were always cool with me. As far as I was concerned, you were always a cool guy, laid back, really nice. You never came across weird. There were a handful of people in that locker room that kind of did, and I'm sure you know some of the people we might be talking about.
Oh, so many people. Brian Malonis and I would when we were traveling full time, we'd get drunk and share stories of the weird people, and every story revolved around an NFW locker room for me. And I'd always win. And he'd always be like, yeah, no, because we'd pull up clips on YouTube, like, oh no, you thought that was your, watch this. Or, yeah. Look at this guy. And we just drink more and more and just giggle and laugh. And he'd always, yeah, you win. Okay, you win. It's like, yeah. I know some creepy people,
that,
man.
That was a weird, yeah, that was a very weird era. So tell us a little bit about your journey to there. You know, you trained, you were a kid, you were always a fan of wrestling. And you kind of went on, you eventually got trained by Harley Race. What was kind of the journey getting there to the Harley Race training area?
It was, when I was a little kid, my uncle took me to a fair up in northern Wisconsin, Merrill, Wisconsin. And the AWA was real prominent through that area. And my uncle is a huge wrestling fan. And you know, he wanted to spend time with his nephew, so he took me to a wrestling show, and I got to watch Bruiser Brody versus Stan Hansen. That was the main event.
Nice.
Yeah, it was supposed to be Abby, but Abby, for some reason, canceled, as wrestlers do. And
yeah.
It was Hansen and Brody, and they brawled next to me. And I remember Brody standing tall and doing the huss. And he was 4 or 5 people away from me, but, you know, I'm 7 years old, and he looked 10 feet tall.
Yeah. I mean, he was kind of 10 feet tall.
He was.
But to a 7-year-old,
I looked at my uncle and said, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. And from that moment on, I was addicted to it. And I was, I, found out because my Brody became my favorite that I had to do, you know, and I'm going to date myself here. I had a tape trade. So yeah, I had to go and find. Yeah. So I had to find tapes. So that's how I got educated on Japanese wrestling, Puerto Rican wrestling, because Brody never stayed in one place too long.
Yeah.
But then also on TV, I'd get, you know, we'd get the WWF and we'd get the WCW, and ESPN would always play like AWA stuff and WCCW. So I got like a mixture of everything.
Yeah.
And I was just hooked. And, you know, going through college, I played football and stuff like that. And it all started with one day I was at a buddy's house, and we used to get together for the pay-per-views all the time. And you know, young 20, 21-year-old kids drinking and watching that. And then after the pay-per-view's done, we'd go out back and just start beating the crap out of each other. It was exciting. And one of those pay-per-views, a guy goes, "Hey, have you ever thought about doing this?" And I was like, "Oh, God, yeah, like that'd be my dream." But you don't know how to do that, you know? It was way before the internet and stuff. And he says, "Yeah, my neighbor actually is a professional wrestler. He, they just had the ring set up and the news came over because they were trying to convince backyarders to stop doing backyard and come and be trained as a professional.
Yeah.
If you want, you can meet him." And I was like, "Yeah, hell yeah." So he took me over and I met a guy named Jet Bennett. And to this day, Jet and I are still really good friends.
Okay.
He gave me like a list of people that I could start breaking in with. And what's funny is the first name on that list was a guy named Ace Steel.
Yeah.
And it was a Steel name. Yep. And that's where like CM Punk and Colt Cabana trained.
Yeah.
And I called and they were closed because what I didn't know at the time, but I later found out, was Ace and Danny, the two owners, were fighting with each other and they were splitting up.
Yeah.
So the school closed and whatnot. And what's funny is years later when I was at Harley's full time, Ace would come in all the time.
Oh, okay.
And when Ace got signed and he tore his ACL to rehab, he was at Harley's and he'd be like, "I only want to work with you in the ring. I know you know what you're doing. Like, I don't want to rehab with anybody else, just with you." So through the process of that, and he'd teach me stuff and all that, but I shared him that story and he giggled. He's like, "Oh, what could have been?" But the next name on the list was a guy named Trevor Adonis, and he had a gym right by where I went to college.
Okay.
So I ended up showing up, and he says, "Yeah, for $150, come out to this bar. You'll do a 2-hour seminar, and if you like it, I'll introduce you to people that can train you." I said, "Okay." My 2-hour seminar turned into 4.5 hours.
Nice.
Because I just started picking it up, and Trevor's like teaching me more and more and more and more. And so he ended up breaking me into the business. And then about a year and a half after that is Harley used to do these week-long camps at his school.
Yeah.
I went and did one. And what they did is they awarded you where one person would be awarded a scholarship to this Harley school. One person would be chosen to go over to NOAH in Japan to train at the dojo. And then one person would get signed out of it for WWE. So my first year there, I got selected for the scholarship.
Nice.
A guy named Thorif, who's now known as Eric Redbeard or Eric Rowan.
Yeah.
He was selected for the NOAH school. And then a guy named Kenny Omega was signed to the WWE. So from that moment on, I remember going back home and I had kids and stuff at the time. And I remember talking to Trevor going, "I don't know. That's like 8 hours from home. I'm leaving everything behind." And he said to me, he goes, "You're going to regret not learning from the greatest professional wrestler ever and learning, taking his knowledge in. You know, you're young, do it." And
right.
So I did it. And I moved everything, picked up everything and moved to Eldon, Missouri. And for the next 5 years, lived and breathed professional wrestling with Harley Race.
Yeah.
And it was, I always say I went to grade school and high school with Trevor, but I went to college with Harley. Like Harley taught us the in-ring stuff, the business stuff, how to talk to the promoters, how to act, you know, when you're with the big companies and how to protect yourself businessly, like not just in the ring, but business-wise. And
negotiations
how to talk, you know,
and stuff like that.
Exactly, yeah. So we got to learn all that. And Harley would get there at 10 in the morning. We'd have training till 5. So I'd show up at 10:30 at the school. And I'd just sit in his office and pick his brain. And we'd watch old tapes of his. And he'd pull out old booking sheets. And then we'd go to lunch. And then I'd go to the gym and show up for training. And then it ended up got to the point where he gave me a key to the school because I never left the school.
Yeah.
I was always there. I always wanted to be in the ring. You know, like I moved 8 hours away. I'm not here to work a server job at Pizza Hut. You know, I'm here to wrestle. And so that's what I did. And it was the best decision I ever made.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really cool. And it's fun to hear some of those stories from those guys, especially while you're training, because you learn, you also kind of, you know, some of them don't necessarily tell you their mistakes, but you can catch what their mistakes were. Through the storytelling, like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't do that, or maybe I should do this, or, you know, they'll tell you about a time they got into a fight with someone about whatever reason, and you're like, oh, okay, well, if I want to avoid that situation, that's what I do. So it's always fun hearing some of those stories. So where do you go from there? You get done with Harley races and then you just start doing independence all over the place?
I was already doing independence, a lot of independence. You know how it is. You in order to be a professional wrestler, you got to get your own booking. So I was getting booked all over the Midwest, as far as north as Minnesota, all the way down to Arkansas. You know, like that whole any place I could drive, I'd get in the car, and a bunch of us guys from Harley's, we get in the car, and we always joke because Eldon, Missouri, was literally 8 hours from anywhere that we could wrestle. Because Harley had such a hold on the state, we couldn't wrestle for other promotions within Missouri or where Harley would run. Harley had that rule, like you're trained by me, you wrestle for me, you don't go to these other crap promotions. Like, okay, cool. So we'd have to drive all over the place. Well, about 2009, I realized that I was now the trainer. I was training guys now at Harley's. I was learning, but I was doing more training than I was learning. And I remember sitting down with Harley going, look, Harley, I've been here, 5 years. I've got kids at home. You know, I miss them. Like, can I move back? Like, kind of your blessing type thing. And he says, yeah. And then he said, anytime I needed them, like, he was a phone call away, and he'd still book me. So I moved back to Wisconsin and started doing more and more indies and just making a name for myself. I changed my name and stuff like that. And just really my career picked up as soon as I got back to Wisconsin, where I got with a good group of guys, and we just started traveling all over the Midwest again, and just we weren't making any money, but we were learning, we were getting our name out there and all that. And I met Steve Corino really early in my career, before moving to Harley's, and I'd always kept in contact. And when I'd gotten back, I'd done a couple shows with Steve. And Steve was like, why don't you do a Ring of Honor tryout? Like, they want characters. You're a character. The Spear City Bruiser is a character. Like, why don't you do the tryout? And I told him, like, at the point, I was pretty much, I'd done WWE tryouts. I had, TNA tryout. Like, I didn't want to be, I told him, I says, I really just don't want to do that. I'm having fun doing the indies, kind of big fish, small pond syndrome, And he kept pushing and kept pushing. And then I met Kevin Steen, who was Kevin Owens. And he kept telling me, like, do this tryout. Then I met Kevin Kelly. And he kept telling me. And then Ring of Honor came in Milwaukee and Minnesota, and we got dark matches with them. And like, the locker rooms, why aren't you doing this tryout? And I in my head, I was happy. I thought I was happy being big fish, small pond. And my father-in-law, I met meet my wife, we get married. My father-in-law passes away in 2013, and he had been my biggest fan and supporter. And he had always told me too, like, because him and Karina were really good friends. It's like, Steve says there's this trial coming up. Why aren't you doing it? And no, same bullshit. He passes away, and in his will, he leaves enough money, but the only way we can touch it is it's enough money for a flight, a rental car, a hotel room, and the fee for the tryout. And the only way we could have it is if I did it. That's how much faith he had in me. So I said, all right, I'll do it. And I told my wife, I said, when I do this tryout, though, I'm not just going to be one of the guys. I'm going to be the guy. Like, I'm going to do everything. I'm getting a job. Like, I'm going to do something. And after the 2 day tryout, Delirious Hunter, who I'd known from the Indies because he grew up in St. Louis, around the St. Louis area. So we were kind of in the same indie shows and stuff, breaking in, and he knew I was as Ginty. And then he saw the creation of the Beer City Bruiser. He pulls me aside and he goes, we have the top prospect tournament coming up in June. You're in it. Like, you can't say no. I want you in it. You are the man of this tryout. Like, the Japanese love you. We love you. Like, we want you on our roster. And I was like, okay, cool. So then January comes along, and that's when I do the top prospect tournament, and rest is history. You know,
awesome.
I go do the tryout and just start killing it.
Who are some of your early guys that you worked with that were like, you know, because all the indie shows, every once in a while, they're like, we're going to bring in a big name. And you and I talked beforehand about a match that you had with Raven. Was that one of your early ones where you're like, this is a big name guy, or did you have other ones before that?
I've had other ones before that. I, you know, Honky Tonk Man was one. He was my very first one.
Okay.
And then Steve Corino. I actually did a whole ECW loop for a while where it was nice. Steve Corino, Chris Candido, Raven, you know what I mean? And being an ECW fan, I loved Sabu, you know, I remember taking a bunch of Sabu chair shots and, you know, wrestling with those guys, but I became friends with those guys too, because I'd pick their brains.
Yeah.
Like, what do I do? How do I get better? And I remember, I still tell Steve to this day, the minute he gave me his phone number, I was the most annoying thing on the planet. Cause I'd text him every day with questions. Yeah. Every day I'd send him matches. Oh, I just had this match, and I'd send it to him. Same with Raven, where I just constantly kept in contact with Raven. And it's funny because I lost contact with him, and I did the Jericho Cruise, the very first one.
Yeah.
And I was walking down one way in the hallway, and Raven was walking towards me, and he was doing that side head tilt. Like,
he recognized
me. Familiar. Yeah. But my badge said Beer City Bruiser. And he's, you know, so he's looking at my badge, he's looking at my face, he's like, you're that Stu kid, aren't you? I said, yeah. So this is my gimmick now. He goes, I didn't know that. He goes, I love this new, you're in Ring of Honor. Yeah, you know. And it turns out, like, he thought I'd gone away because I'd stopped the Dinty name and started using the Beer City Bruiser.
Yeah.
So he was like, okay, here's a kid I helped, and he's gone now. And so he was so happy. So when we started communicating again, it was awesome.
That is super cool. What was it like for you, you know, getting in, being able to be in the ring for the first time with some of these names that you knew growing up and did that obviously change, or did you, training with Harley, kind of erase that whole part where you're like, you know, step in and like, okay, well, this is professional. You don't act like it matters. It's just another match.
I get excited, obviously. Mm-hmm. Especially with like a Tommy Dreamer, who I looked up to my whole life. You know what I mean? And there'd be nerves and stuff, but like, Ken Anderson, we used to travel together. And when I did my first WWE, extra work, I was with him.
Okay.
And driving there, I was really nervous. And he gave me advice that I kind of just live by every time. And he says, you know, you're here for a reason. They know your talent. Like, they wouldn't book you if they didn't know your talent. You know, when you're put in situations in wrestling, it's because they know you. They know how you've been trained. They know you're trained the right way. So whenever I'd wrestle a bigger name at the time, that's the mindset I had. I'm put in this position for a reason, you know? So I'm going to go out there, do the best I can, and learn as much as I can. Because someday I'm going to be that name. And I am now. Now I'm that guy that comes in. You know, and I always try to tell the kids too before, because I'll see if they're nervous or whatnot. I'll pull them aside and go, look, you're in this position for a reason. You know, you're here because somebody trusts in your training. I don't know you, but I know that you're booked against me because a promoter trusts you to be here.
Yeah.
So you don't need to be nervous. Let's just go out, create some magic, and come back and drink some beer.
Yeah.
You know? So that's always helped me. And that helped me through Ring of Honor. So I'd still get nervous and, you know, big matches throw up before the big matches and stuff. But like, I did have especially in Ring of Honor, I had a couple holy shit moments where I had to pinch myself. Like, is this real? Like, is this really happening? You know, the Madison Square Garden show, walking out on the stage and just looking around, like, I'm in Madison Square Garden. Here's this kid from a small town in Wisconsin that's literally in the biggest stage. You know, I'm in the most famous arena in the world. You know, when I was in Japan, same thing. You
Working
know, I had to pinch myself. Yeah. And I was working huge names. Like, I was Hirooki Goto, who I looked up to as a kid. And here I am wrestling him. Suzuki, Jushin Thunder Liger. Like, I'm sharing the ring with these guys. And then later on, you get further down. And I remember Brian and I had to do a Battle Royal spot. And my whole spot was with Gangrel and Blue Meanie and PCO. And I'm like, I watched these guys. Yeah. You know, here I am creating memories and going viral, and it was great, you know. So
that's great. What was it like? Tell us about the walk-in. You know, the build-up to the Madison Square Garden, right? Because that's a historic moment, right?
Yeah.
Nobody's been there for so many years up to that point, besides WWE. And now here, Ring of Honor, New Japan's coming in, and they've got this show, and it's at Madison Square Garden, and you're on it. Walk us through your feelings, how that happened.
It's funny. I want to say about a year before that, I used to ride with Kevin Kelly a lot. And just get to talking. And Kevin goes, you know, everyone has a bucket list in wrestling. Like, what's on your bucket list? And I told him, I says, you know, this was right after we got back from Japan. And I had said to him, well, I only have one thing left, and I don't think it's going to happen. He goes, what's that? I said, work Madison Square Garden. Because I had all these other little bucket list stuff. And the last one I knew when I did Japan, I'm like, okay, I've checked everything off but Madison Square Garden. I'm okay with that, you know, because that's rare for people to wrestle there. So right. I was telling Kevin. Kevin's like, oh, it's a shithole. You don't want to wrestle there. Like, I've been there enough, you know. Then you fast forward a year. And they make the announcement, but they didn't tell the roster who's working there other than the main champions.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because they're waiting for New Japan to come back and decide who goes where and whatnot. And Malonis and I are like, they're not going to put us on the show. Like, we're popular because we're the beer drinking baby.
Yeah, faces, you're the fun guys. Like,
we're the guys that you had to beat us to get to the next level in tag team. So like, usually we'd do a feud with the Briscoes, and then we'd lose to the Briscoes, and then whatever team was going to face the Briscoes, we'd get into something with them, and then they'd beat us to get to the Briscoes, or GOD, or the Kingdom, or whoever the top tag team was. So we're like, there's no way, So we just kind of, it's cool, Ring of Honor's there. Okay, if we're not on it, it sucks, but we want to be on it. And then the graphic came out, and it was like, man, we're on this, you know, we were told you guys are on the show. Because you have to approve your graphics and stuff. Like,
okay.
And we're like, okay, not approved, but like they send it to you before they put it out to the show. And I remember getting it from Ian. We always call him Irish Ian. He was like the accountant for Ring of Honor. And I got it from him. I texted him back. I'm like, haha, funny joke. You know, don't be a dick. And he's like, no, this is true. Like, you guys are there. And like, Malonis texted me, he goes, hey, did Ian send you a picture? Is this a joke? And I was like, no, man. Like, we still didn't want to believe it.
Yeah.
And then Ring of Honor set up a cigar line for me with the Martinez cigars.
Oh.
So I had my own cigars. Yeah, I had my own cigars. So I had to film a commercial for it, promoting it at Madison Square Garden. And I'm like, maybe I am doing this. And then Martinez goes, hey, we're doing a meet and greet the day of the show, and we're only a block away from Madison Square Garden. So we're going to book you for the meet and greet. And then we'll get you done enough time to make call time at Madison Square Garden. And I'm like, man, this is really happening. Like, and then we got our itinerary, and then we get, you know what I mean? And like, it didn't really hit me until I walked in, and I remember standing next to Todd Sinclair Pants and Malonis. And I looked up in the ceiling, because the ceiling to me has always been iconic. Because all the WrestleManias, remember, they do the pyro along the ceiling.
Right.
And I remember looking up, and I'm like, that's it. Like, I'm here. I'm doing this. And that's when it was like, all right. And you get excited and nervous. And it was unbelievable.
That is cool.
Best time of my life. I loved it. Every single second.
So did you make a new bucket list after that? I was like, well, everything's checked off. I better make a new one.
I made a new, because then I was like, all right, I'm fine. Like, this is where I'm going. And then after Ring of Honor got bought and I was essentially jobless, that's when I made a new bucket list.
Okay.
Because I had to have surgeries, and I had to have, you know, my hip needed to be done. And my family had sacrificed a lot over the last 24 years. So I made it a bucket list for them.
Okay.
You know, like, I've done a lot in wrestling. This is what I want to do. But I'm keeping my family in mind when I set it up. So I have a different bucket list, and I'm working on that right now. So
that's great, though. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Karakin Hall and your work there and your time in Japan. Did you have like a culture shock going over there for the first time? And then, of course, eventually going to Karakin and working with all those guys?
I've been a fan of not just Japanese wrestling, but Japan my whole life. I studied a little bit of Japanese, you know, their culture and stuff. I'm a huge fan of. And flying over there was amazing. It was like I said, you have to pinch yourself.
Yeah.
And before everything started, again, Kevin Kelly, we met for breakfast, and we're eating breakfast the day before the show. And I says, man, I don't want to waste this opportunity. Like, I want to make an impact, you know, like, what do I do? You know, like, and I'm asked, cause he knows he's been to Japan so many times,
right.
You know? And he goes, well, look to your idols. So what do you mean? He goes, well, look at a Brody, look at Terry Gordy. Those are the guys that you idolize. Look what they did. So well, in their entrances, they just come out and harass the fans. He's like, that's what you have to do. And I was like, I don't know, man. It's like, you know, it's 2018 now. Like, you can't do that. He's like, trust me, it'll be fine. So the first night I'm supposed to work Hirooki Goto for the Never Open Weight Championship. So I'm like nervous, and you know, you asked about nerves and stuff. And what's funny is Hunter, Delirious, the booker of Ring of Honor, calls me to his room and he goes, you all right? I says, yeah, you know, I'm a little nervous. Like, I'm excited, but I'm nervous. I don't, you know, I want to represent the company, but I want to do good. And he's like, here, try one of these. And it's a thing called Strong Zero. And it's a big alcoholic beverage over there.
Okay.
So here me and him are 4 hours before the show pounding these stouts, Strong Zeros. And I'm like, Hunter, I can't get drunk. Like, I have one of the biggest matches of my life. Like, I can't get hammered before it. He's like, no, let's take the edge off. You know, these things are great. And we get there and Hirooki Goto, and we're talking over the match, like, oh, you do this. Oh, you do this. Can you do this and this? And I was like, oh, my God. Because it's an honor for them to take bumps for you when you do stuff. And he busted his butt. And it turns out I'd worked Naito a month before in Toronto.
Okay.
And took care of him. I had such a good match with him that the whole locker room wanted to work me now.
Oh, nice.
So they all wanted to do that for me.
So he took some bumps for you then.
He took a DVD on the apron. He took something on the floor. Like, he just balls to the wall. You know, no, I worked Naito after him.
Oh, okay.
I worked with Suzuki and Liger before him.
Okay.
So they're the ones that said, I worked Naito after, because Naito saw the DVD and wanted to take the DVD on the apron in Toronto. And I'm like, are you sure? He's like, yes, yes. Like, you know, Hiroki-san said, very good, very safe. I said, okay, like, your body.
Yeah.
But back in Japan, you know, so I got done with the match. I'm like, all right, cool. And they told me that the next night I was going to work Hanrei, who was green at the time. He had just graduated the dojo. So they're like, it'll be the opening match. It'll be 5 minutes long. We just want you to look really strong. And, you know, when I came out for the Goto match, what I did is I'd take my beer and I'd spit it at the fans. And that was my way of getting them to scatter and run, was I'd spit the beer at them.
Okay.
And it got to the point where I'd fake them out. And and it was just amazing. You see all these fans running away and they're cheering and they're laughing. And I'm like, okay. And after the match with Goto, walking back to my hotel room, because I was going to put my stuff away and then we're all going to go out that night. As I'm walking back, there's a line of fans outside and they're all waiting for me.
And they've all got, where you're going with this.
Yeah, they all got beer and they got yen. And they'd hand me the yen, they'd hand me the beer, and they'd say, please, please spit, please. So I'm getting paid to spit beer in their face. Well, you know how many times you can spit in someone's face with one beer?
Right.
Every fan's handing me beer. So I didn't have to pay for beer the whole trip because they're just handing me beer. But I already had one open, so I just take a sip and, you know. So I'm making money doing that. I'm spitting beer and stuff. And then we go out, we have a good time, and I'm thinking, okay, the next day it'll be a nice, easy day, and get done with my match with Hanrei. It was a really good match, and we, you know, same thing with their entrance and stuff. The fans loved it. I get done with the match, and I get called in the back. They're like, hey, the office wants to talk to you. And I was like, oh, great. Like, I'm getting fired. You know, like, yeah. I did something to Goto, or I did something to this kid, and I disrespect. Maybe it's the beer thing. Like, I'm so mad at Kevin right now. Like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And so in the Japanese locker rooms, the way they had it split up is they had it split up by factions. So Bullet Club had a room.
Okay.
LIJ had a room. And then all the Americans were in their own room. And then the office had their own room.
Okay.
So I walk in the office, and sitting there is Delirious, Booker from Ring of Honor, Joe Koff, the president of Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
The piece of shit Greg Gillian, who is like just a piece of shit for Ring of Honor. Then you had the president of New Japan. You had Gato, who was the booker for New Japan.
Yeah.
And then you have Jado, who was assistant booker. And they're all sitting there and they're like, okay, good. We need to talk to you. And I'm literally like butt puckered.
What did I do?
Like, what is going on? I'm going through everything I did in the last, since I landed in Japan, I'm like, what did I do? You know? And they said, we need you to work the main event tonight also. And I says, what do you mean? They said, well, Dalton's back is bad because he was going through the back injury.
Yeah.
And Trent had torn his pectoral and bicep muscle. So both of them were hurt, and they don't think they can go the full 20 minutes to give the fans the main event. So we're going to make it a three-way, and we want you to be the guy to do that. And I said, yeah, sure. Like, cool. It's more time on TV. That's, you know, like, yeah, I can do that.
Makes you look good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, okay. So I walk over to Trent and Dalton to talk about the match, and they both apologize. They're like, you're in 99% of this match because we're so beat up. And I only had a half hour to remember everything.
Yeah.
So right before I'm walking out, I'm trying to go through everything and I'm nervous again. Gato walks up to me and he says, Bruiser-san, you cut promo, get heat. I said, wait, what? He says, yeah, you please grab Mike, cut promo. I said, I don't know Japanese. He said, no, in English, please, English. So not only did I, now am I in the main event for the Ring of Honor world title,
yeah.
So it's for the belt, but I'm also cutting a promo and I'm featured in the match.
Yeah.
It goes by as a blur. It's a great match. We get done. I get into the back and everyone's clapping and I'm getting hugs and the New Japan president walks up and goes, you out with office tonight for dinner, which was rare. They only invited certain guys to go out with all the office guys.
Yeah.
And then Gato called me the Japanese word for workhorse because in Japan, you never work more than once in a night. It was very, unless it was a tournament.
Yeah.
And I did it on literally on half hour's notice. And so I get all done and I get back to my room and I have to call my wife, you know, like I don't give a shit about the time difference. So I call her and she's like, are you okay? Like, what's wrong? Like, is this an emergency? And I told her what's going on and I'm just trying to calm down.
you know what I mean? That's like, exciting. That's awesome.
Yeah. It went from my dream being there to like literally one of the best times of my life. And then, you know, and I told her what's going on at the office and stuff. And I ended up going out to dinner and it was amazing. You know, and the next couple of days we had off, so I got to explore and buy souvenirs, and it was just great.
Yeah. Nice. That's awesome. Let's fast forward a little bit. Last night, this weekend, right? This leak weekend, WrestleMania weekend. You know a lot of people that were part of the show. You alluded to it earlier. Tell me your reaction to seeing people that you're friends with, people like a Damian Priest and a Cody and Rhodes winning the World Heavyweight Champion this weekend. What are your thoughts on that? And if you had words for them, what would they be?
Oh man, I was so excited for not only Damian Priest, you know, I know him as Punishment, but for Cody obviously finishing his story, and then on the not well known side, Mark Briscoe Chicken winning the Ring of Honor world title. I texted all of them obviously and was just so happy. And Priest winning the belt, man, like he's one of the nicest guys on this planet. And I used to room with him. We used to travel and we were in a feud for a little bit. So like I got to know Luis, like the actual guy.
Yeah.
And know how hard he's worked at getting this. Cause he used to be a huge guy and he was depressed and homeless and all that. And he talks about it in that press conference. But like I got to watch him work hard. I got to watch him cut weight. I got to watch him go to different nutritionists to find out how to cut the weight, you know, and I got to watch him creatively come up with the Punishment character, which would later become the Damian Priest, you know? So it was awesome to see it finally pay off. I actually saw him at Delirious's wedding. He had just randomly showed up and it was so cool to see him. And I says, man, like the best thing about watching you right now is you look like you're having fun.
Yeah.
And he says, man, he goes, I am. He goes, every day I show up to work, I'm having fun. You know, and now knowing that he's got this, like, I don't have cable, but I figured out a way to watch Raw tonight because I know that he's going to cut a promo, you know, and I just want to see it, you know. And then with Mark, you know, texting with Mark and telling him how happy and proud I am. And then it was a couple years to the day that Jay won it.
Right.
And just the stuff he's been through in the last 2 years with losing Jamin and just how strong he's been.
Yeah.
And that he deserves this.
I was going to say, and how much he deserves to be there and be in that spot. And
exactly.
And the work that he's put in just this last year, right?
Yeah.
The stuff that he's done, has just been so beyond, you know, and I don't know him. I just know as a fan, that kind of stuff. But in seeing the work that he's put on from a fan's perspective, like, he's evolved immensely just in this last year. And it's just been so cool to watch. So obviously,
and they've been that way. Like, the Briscoes were literally the lifeblood of Ring of Honor. They were the hardest working guys in the room. If they saw someone working harder than them, they'd work hard. And they were family. You know, they loved their families. Chicken's got all these kids, and he's a great father. And we'd always joke, because towards the end of my run in Ring of Honor, before it got sold, my hip was getting really bad. And he's got bad knees. And we'd be limping around and then have to go wrestle. And we'd wrestle and we'd come back. We'd just joke about who had the worst limp, you know, because we were so beat up. But, like, it never stopped us from going out there. And it never stopped him from doing what he did. And then he could have taken time off after Jay passed away. But he was on TV just to let everybody know, hey, it's okay. Yeah. You know, we miss him, yes, but it's okay. And at the funeral, we went down a night early to hang out at the Briscoe's farm with the family. There was only a select few of us there, and we watched the Rumble, and they were all so positive and happy. And Mark was the leader of that. He was the one, you know, yes, he missed Jay. Yes, he shed tears, but he knows that he's going to see Jay. And, you know, Jay's up in heaven waiting for him, and his faith will carry him through. And I don't care if you're religious or not, seeing that makes you have faith, you know, like, and then him going out on TV, and then the nieces and his nieces, Jay's daughters, walking on. It was just, it was so good. And I remember telling my wife, I go, I really hope they put the belt on Mark, because it would be great storytelling. But I really want them to put it on him too, because he deserves it.
Yeah.
Because when you think Ring of Honor, you think Briscoes.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they did it. I'm glad they went that route.
And you want it to be because he deserves it, right? You don't want it to just be like, oh, here's an afterthought. Because that's kind of crappy. But to do it because he deserves it is really important.
And same with Cody, you know, that match, I tell young wrestlers after it was done, I sent a group to my students and I says, everybody needs to go back and watch the Mark and Joe match, Ring of Honor, and then the Roman and Cody match. And I said, you'll realize it's not about moves. It's not about telling someone to piss off. It's about storytelling and emotion.
Yeah.
Because what those guys brought out was emotional. You know, where you could take a casual person who doesn't know who they are, sit them in front of that TV, and they will feel something at the end of those matches.
Yeah.
And that's professional wrestling, you know? And that's what Harley would teach us. You can throw 400 moonsaults, you know? It's when people care about you. That's when it makes you a good wrestler.
Yeah.
And those matches proved it. And then Mark and Cody both with their speeches at the end, you know what I mean? Like, and that shows the type of people they are. Yeah. You know,
it's amazing. Shifting gears a little bit. When you're looking, you're going around traveling the world, you're going to these arenas, and arenas gather up this energy and these feelings and these emotions. Do you think when it comes to the paranormal that a lot of those emotions stick around there? And do you think a lot of these arenas and a lot of these places you've been to, or do you know that some of them are haunted or have things tied to them because of those feelings and emotions?
I do. Being in the paranormal world, as excited as I am, I would always do my research before we go into towns and find either the building we were in, the hotel we were in, or something close by that I could go check out. And traveling with Malonis hated it. Malonis does not want to believe in the paranormal, does not want to believe in ghosts and goblins and ghouls and Bigfoot. And here he has me as his tag partner. And we spent more time with each other than our families.
Yeah.
And all I would be doing is like, oh, we got to go here because there's a Bigfoot sighting, or, oh, we got to go here, a Chupacabra sighting, or, oh, this hotel, we got to get this room because this happens. He just, like, it got to the point where he's like, look, man, if it's haunted, don't tell me. He's like, just like, I'm glad you're excited, but don't tell me.
Right.
And we had numerous times where we'd be in our hotel room, and I knew it was a haunted hotel. And, like, one of the times I remember, we were both in our beds and watching TV. It was after the show, so it's pretty early in the morning. And randomly our sink would just turn on. and we'd walk over and it would turn off. And then we'd walk away and turn back on. We'd walk over and turn, you know, this is going on. And he kept like yelling at me, like, Bruiser, I know you're ripping me. Like, I know it's a remote. Give me the remote controller. Give me the string. I'm like, bro, I swear to God. And then like I'd pull up my equipment, my EVPs, and I'd start doing stuff. He's like, stop that shit. You know, like, we don't need to do that. You're awakening the bad stuff. And I'd be like, no, this is the perfect time to investigate. Like, stuff's happening. I need to record it. I need to know what's going on. Or like we'd be in a building and I'd be like, hey man, let's come check this out with me. He's like, no, I'm not going there. Has there been a fire there or someone hung themselves there or something happened? And I'm like, yeah, but I want to go check it out, you know, and it'd just be fun. And it was great because I got paid to go to places that, you know, where most people pay to go to investigate. And I get like many investigations and people like Manny Leon and Angelina Love, they were big into the paranormal too. So we formed our own little like paranormal group.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it got to the point where before the pandemic, we had pitched an idea where every town we'd go into, they'd either send us in 2 days early or fly us out 2 days later. And we'd find a haunted location and we'd do an investigation. We'd film it and then put it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And we got the approval, and then COVID happened.
Oh.
But we were all excited because I'm like, you know, this is the fun stuff. you know, this is, I love wrestling, but like, this is the great stuff. And, right. And it was, you know, it's taken away, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, for sure. How did you meet with Tim Dennis from Darkness Radio? Was that through the Jericho Cruise?
No, I've known Tim. God.
Was it through wrestling?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He used to be a ring announcer in Minnesota.
Yeah.
God, it's been at least 20 years I've known him.
Okay.
But he was a ring announcer / owner / booker. So he'd always bring me up to that Minnesota.
Haunted, and it was in a haunted location quite a bit too.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And I found that out because I would do my research obviously before I got there. And then he saw me pull out some of my recorders and stuff. And it kind of like in his head. And then there's another guy named Ian who he co-promoted with. And Ian knew I was into the ghost hunting and stuff and the paranormal. So he kind of would talk to Tim, and then it would turn out where Tim and I we get the wrestling talk aside, just start talking paranormal.
Yeah.
And so like I said, I've known him for years, and then we'd always keep in contact. And then on the Jericho Cruise, I was made like, I had to wrestle, but I was also made like the host of all, like they had a bar crawl. So I was a host of that. They had
That makes sense. Who else would be?
They had a flip cup game tournament. So I was a host of that. They had a beer pong tournament. I was a host of that. And so like Darkness Radio was doing a bar crawl of their own, but it was, they'd tell spooky stories because we were in the Bermuda Triangle. And Tim goes, hey, why don't you come along? And we got Santana and Ortiz, and why don't you three be like our guests and do the bar crawl with us? And then I'll put you on the podcast later. And I was like, yeah, sure. Like, and I used to listen to Darkness Radio ever since I met Tim. So I was like, yeah, I'm pitching it to like Cheeseburger and Manny, the other people I knew that I learned the cruise that loved paranormal.
Yeah.
So I ended up doing that. And then we ended up doing the podcast. And then when Ring of Honor got closed, and sold, he called me up and he says, because Dave had just left Darkness Radio.
Yeah.
He says, hey, man, are you still into the paranormal? And are you looking for something to do? And I was like, why would he got in mind? It's like, I need a co-host for Darkness Radio, but I need somebody that knows kind of what they're talking about.
Yeah.
But you can bring in an extra perspective because you've traveled the world, you know? And I was like,
And you're underwater point.
Exactly. And then, well, so when he brought me on, a lot of our fans were ready to become a wrestling podcast.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know me, mm-hmm. you know, and Tim knew me. Tim knew I was an investigator. Tim knew I'd done investigations. I'd done research. Tim knew that, but our listeners didn't. So that's when we came up with the code word underwater needle points. That way we could talk about it. But what turns out is a lot of the fans, when they realized that I knew what I was talking about and I'm not just there to talk wrestling.
Yeah.
I'm there to talk paranormal and all that. And like, I actually have insight in this stuff.
Yeah.
They started coming around where now we can mention wrestling. And now they have a chat. If you go to darknessradioshow.com, that's the website, but there's a Facebook chat group you can be added to. And I don't talk all the time there, but I'll check in and stuff. And those, like this whole WrestleMania weekend, they are all talking about WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And I'm a firm believer that paranormal fans, comic book fans, and wrestling fans are all the same.
I agree.
Cut from the same cloth. Same with race car, NASCAR. Now I'm in North Carolina. Racing fans are all the same, cut from the same cloth.
Right.
You know? So, yeah. So that's how it started with Tim, where I joined the podcast. And then I was just a guest at first, but then listeners still were asking for me. And now I've had to take some time off now because I've had some home repairs here.
Yeah.
And it was just, I didn't have any in my schedule. But once they're all done, you know, I've been talking to Tim.
Be back on there more regularly.
Oh, yeah. I miss doing it. I miss the fans. I miss the listeners. You know, it's great because I'll do my wrestling shows or I'll do meet and greets, and I can tell the Darkness Radio listeners because they'll come up and share the inside jokes, the McRibs and the underwater needlepoint, and they'll say, and I'll look at them, go, oh, all right. Like, yeah. I'll FaceTime with Tim so that he can say hi to him and stuff like that. It's a good time.
Did you used to listen to Art Bell and stuff on when you were on the road driving for wrestling? Because I know there were a handful of times where it's like, you're driving for so long, you have to listen to something, you know, and it's sometimes music gets old.
Yep.
And so when it's late at night, it's like, let's listen to Art Bell and drive on the creepy back roads of Wisconsin or wherever.
Yeah. And people don't realize, like, this is before podcasts, this is before streaming and all that. So you use CDs and stuff and
scrolling on the AM dial.
Exactly. And it was funny because I had my radio preset for every state I drive through to what station Art Bell was on.
Yeah.
So if I'd be driving someplace and I'd lose him, I knew I could hit preset number 2 and it'd bring it up to whatever city I was approaching. And I could listen to Art Bell then. And then, you know, or Ian or any of the guys. And it was funny because a lot of the guys would make fun of me because when we drove from Missouri back to Wisconsin for shows, I obviously would listen to that. And we'd get to the area and like, they'd be like, oh, cool. We don't have to listen to this shit anymore. And like, I'd be like, nope, wait, hold on. Beep. Okay, here we go. We're back. And then like, I had a couple paranormal experiences with the guys.
Okay.
And that got them a little interested. You know, I remember one, we were driving back for a show in Warsaw. We were in Warsaw, Missouri. We were driving back to Eldon. We were doing some back roads in Missouri. We're listening to, Coast to Coast, and I don't recommend drinking and driving. We had a case of beer that we were drinking, and we come around this corner and it's bright as day on the side of the road. And there's a historical marker. And as we're driving past, there's these kids playing, but they were all white and glowing. And it was like literally like a spectral, like specter. And we drove past and we're, hey, stop. We go, what was that? We got to, you know, I got to debunk this. Like, it's got to be a street lamp or something. So we stop, we turn around, we go back, and it's dark. There's no kids. And it's just the monument. And my one buddy goes, what is going on? I'm like, we got to get out. We got to get out. We got to debunk this. We got to figure out what happened. He's like, if anybody gets out of this car, I'm leaving. You know, that was his first experience with a ghost.
Yeah.
And so it freaked him out. So we get in the car and we drove away. And the whole time I'm like, man, I wonder if it was that. And I'm in my head, because whenever I do investigations, I always think, what's the natural way this can happen?
Yeah.
Not everything's a ghost.
Right.
And so I'm going through and debunking what I can without being on scene, you know? And I remember it was Ted Jr., Ted DiBiase Jr. driving. I remember him turning around going, would you just shut up? He's like, I'm turning this crap off. He put on Wilson. He put a Wilson Phillips CD in, and that's what we listened to the rest of the way.
There's a thing about, like, the location and the energies that's there. And do you have to sit there and explain to them, like, well, maybe this is like a ball lightning effect, or maybe it's like, maybe it's a ghost, or maybe someone died here. You know, they can't cross the river. Did you like try to do that kind of stuff as well? And just to freak them out?
Not to freak them out, but I want to educate them. Okay. Like, that's the thing I like about Darkness Radio is we educate our listeners too, you know, and like Tim's educated me on a lot.
Yeah.
And like, so I got to educate them of what, you know, we're all energy. And when you die, you can't get rid of energy. Energy goes somewhere.
It's got to go somewhere,
And some energy goes to whatever you believe is in the afterlife. And some of the energy is what's called resilient, and it stays because it's connected to something. And I said, we were passing a historical marker. So I'm assuming if I could have gotten up and read the historical marker, I'm assuming it had something to do with kids.
Yeah.
Because we saw kids there. And
that makes sense.
These kids were playing. So I'm like, that had to be someplace where these kids, and that's where they were the happiest. So when they, however they passed, their energy was there.
Yeah.
You know, and like breaking it down like that kind of eased them where they're like, wait a minute, so ghosts are just energy? And it's yes and no. Like, we don't really know, but like, you know, that's why your EMF detectors go off and that's why your K1s go off. It's the energy, you know, and trying to explain that to them kind of eased their minds, but they never rode with me after that. They always made sure I got in the car with Harley, which I was fine with, but
it's crazy when you look at it and you're like, you can, how far down the rabbit hole you can go to explain. It's like, okay, and then start separating the different types of paranormal experiences. Okay, well, maybe it's a residual haunting versus an active versus an intellectual. You know, you're trying to figure all those things out and separate them. But to some people, like, they don't want to hear that. They're like, okay, it's a ghost. Okay, we're gone. We're out. I'm out.
That's Brian Malonis 100%. And it's funny because one of our last, We do indies together, and one of our indie shows we were on, something happened, and he goes, man, that's kind of like a residual haunt, isn't it? And I was like, look at you. He's like, damn it, why do I know that? He's like, why do I know what a residual? And I'm like, see, man? And he's like, I don't want to go there. He's like, I don't want to go near it, but it's what it sounds like it is. I'm like, you're absolutely 100% right, Brian. That's what it is.
That's awesome. Listen, we could probably sit here and talk paranormal and wrestling for, you know, hours on end, but we don't have the time. So we'll have to have you come back down the road. Tell us about some of your upcoming appearances. You've got some other wrestling shows going on. You'll be on Darkness Radio, you said, coming up at some point.
Tell us every Tuesday and Wednesday, please check out the Darkness Radio wherever you listen to your podcast. Tuesdays is the true crime. And then when I'm on, we do dumb crime, stupid criminals, which I love because it's... One of the stories was like a lady taking a sausage in Walmart and beating her sister with it since she got arrested for assault and battery, which to me is hilarious. And then Wednesday's is the paranormal. It's where we cover all the news, and then we do what's called Parashare, where if you have experiences, send it in. We love hearing that stuff. So that's Tuesdays and Wednesdays, darknessradioshow.com. And then my appearances, I'm actually in Chester, South Carolina this Friday. For a newer company, I'm going down there to wrestle their champ. And then on Saturday, I'm in King, North Carolina, for Foothills Wrestling, I believe it's the Foothills Wrestling Alliance. I'll be out there. I'm in the main event for that. And then come to the end of the month, the 27th, I'm back in South Carolina again, for a different company. And then on the 28th is AML Wrestling, which is kind of like my home company. It's where I train students and stuff now.
Okay.
And we're in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. No, I'm sorry. We're in Statesville, North Carolina. And I'm the prestige heavyweight champion there. So I'll be defending my belt in the doors, ladders, and chairs match, which I'm not looking forward to because I don't like getting hit with chairs. Yeah.
Nice.
And if you want, you know, you can check out amlwrestling.com to get all that. And if you want to train to be a wrestler, I train every Tuesday and Wednesday, or Tuesday and Thursday nights at the AML Pro Wrestling Training Center. So I'll be there this week, amlwrestling.com/training, and you can come and learn from me.
There you go, everyone. Awesome. Your socials, they can find you on Facebook at The Beer City Bruiser on Facebook. On X or Twitter, we had a nice little conversation about, what do we call it? Well, it's Twitter, for crying out loud. At BCB Winchester on Twitter, and Instagram at Beer City Bruiser. You can find you on Cameo, cameo.com/BeerCityBruiser as well, and ProWrestlingTees.com, Beer City Bruisers, and of course, DarknessRadioShow.com as well. You can find it there. Go find all those sites. Go and check on them. Click all the links. Click all of the buttons, because we want to support the Beer City Bruiser.
Yes, please.
All right, everybody. Still to come, we're going to be joined by author and D&D legend, the creator of the Forgotten Realms, Ed Greenwood, is going to be returning to Epic Realms. We're going to talk all of the things that have happened between the last time he was on the show up till now, including the movie that, you know, he created the world for that movie, and his new products, his Patreons, all of his new books, Fate of the Norns, etc., etc., etc. That's going to be live April 22nd. That podcast will be available on April 23rd. So, click all the buttons. Make sure to subscribe, rate, review, all of those things. It really does help us and in turn helps our guests. So For the Beer City Bruiser, I am Nick, and thank you for listening to Epic Realms.
Well, there you are. I hope you enjoyed yourselves, and I do hope that you come back and join us again for Epic Realms.